back in the mid-1980s, when Kelly Finger McNeilo was in high school, she began having problems walking and playing basketball, which was her favorite sport. Soon, Kelly would receive terrible news. She had primary progressive multiple sclerosis, one of the worst forms, which is characterized by progressively worsening symptoms without any relapse. Despite her gradually worsening symptoms, Kelly went on to graduate from MSU and, in the process, helped to improve the campus's accessibility to disabled students. She also married and adopted a child, all while confined to a wheelchair as her condition worsened. Despite her difficulty speaking, she was gracious enough to share her inspiring story with us here at Current State, along with her friend Doreen Rickert-Rademacher, who's written a book about Kelly's life called I Can and I Did. I first asked Doreen how she first met Kelly and what sparked the beginning of their years-long friendship.
It was fun because we both had daughters in elementary school at the time, and so one mother to another, I would see her in the hallway. But she had a little extra something, you know, just the sparkle in her eye. And also it helped that she had a golden retriever next to her, Paws with a Cause dog, that would help her out.
That draws a crowd.
It does.
A nice dog draws a crowd, right?
It does, and it certainly drew me in. I'm a dog lover, and the kids at school were a lot better behaved than the adults, it seemed, because, you know, a Paws dog is supposed to be working. And I would try to sneak in a pet. I'd try to pet that dog and try to cuddle the dog, and Kelly would look at me with the stink eye, like, can't you read? It says don't
I'm working here. Kelly, tell us about when you were first diagnosed with MS. You were a teenager.
I was in high school, and I was in basketball, and I started having problems going up, running up and down the court. Things happened, and I didn't know why they were happening. But looking back, I understand it was MS.
But Doreen, Kelly still managed to be a high school homecoming queen and get into James Madison College here at MSU.
Right. She was determined to be a Spartan. And she talks about the time that she told her dad. Her dad is also a Spartan. And so she was expecting this great celebration. And the reaction she got was different. He was shocked because he was thinking, my gosh, how are you going to navigate that campus?
What was that like, Kelly? This is the late 80s we're talking about here.
I was really proud of getting into Michigan State. And then it was a letdown when my dad said, how are you going to get around?
Doreen, talk to us about what it was like to try to navigate the Michigan State University campus in the late 80s in a wheelchair.
Right. She started in 89. And so when she got here, she had begun using that wheelchair full time. And the car she talks about having on campus, which was a nice convenience as a freshman, because she had the handicap parking allowed, so she could drive where she needed to go. But getting around on campus, we have, you know, news clippings that I asked her mother to find for me when we were going through the research process for the book, so I could get familiar with what was campus life like.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several stories written either in the state news or in the Lansing State Journal with her as the feature, trying to, from her chair, reach a doorway to open a hall so she could get in to a classroom. And the amazing feat it would take of strength just to reach that door and try to get it open and get your wheelchair through it.
Mm.
You know, it put it in perspective for me. Mm-hmm. To see what that must have been like.
Kelly ended up playing a role, had an impact on accessibility issues at the Michigan State campus. Tell us about that.
Well, after experiencing the limitations that she did, and there was a group organizing and had been organized, it was President's Council for Handicap or Accessibility, and she joined that and helped raise awareness of downfalls of places in the on the campus that maybe needed some attention. And the senior gift was to make the Cowles House handicap accessible. And again, she was photographed with President McPherson in the paper the day that happened, and a great event that day that they could find a way to preserve the look of the house with a ramp that would allow people in wheelchairs to get in there.
After you graduated, Kelly, what did you do?
I moved to Atlanta and did an internship at the Paralympics.
And her mom talks about having to drive her down there with a U-Haul van and leave her daughter in a strange city in a wheelchair and worry about how was she going to get around and navigate.
Yeah.
But her mom also realized that she needed to spread her wings, and she wanted to tackle this, and she wanted to enable her to do that and to accomplish everything she could. And it wasn't going to hold Kelly back. She made up her mind, and she was going to do it, and she did.
And then I moved to Chicago, and I worked the disabled sports program there. And then I got married and moved back.
Doreen, tell us about Kelly's meeting Brian and her future husband.
Well, this was a funny story. One day at lunch, we were making small talk, trying to get acquainted, and there's a group of moms that would meet regularly, and so I was trying to get to know Kelly. And she had a Michigan State shirt on, and so I asked her, so did your husband Brian go to state too? And she looked at me and cocked an eyebrow and said no, but his girlfriend did. And we laughed, and I thought, well, are you telling me you stole?
Ex-girlfriend.
Well, ex now, but. Oh, yeah, we had a good giggle over it. Apparently he was dating a gal from the Chicago area that came up to Michigan State, and Kelly was a roommate or friends with her, and that's how she got introduced to Brian, and eventually that first relationship would fall apart, and later Kelly and Brian would spark up a relationship.
And you were married for 10 years, Kelly?
16.
16 years. I beg your pardon. Well, yeah. What was the relationship like?
It was normal at first.
In the interview process for writing the book, Brian played an important role, and it was a bit touchy at the time because things in the relationship were changing, but he was good to share the stories about Kelly when they met, and she was just a ball of fun. You couldn't hold her back. It wasn't that the wheelchair got in her way. It was just part of her and her personality, and she was just fun in all sorts of ways. And being in love, and love is blind, and, you know, here they are married, and they adopted a daughter together, and built a home together and a life together. And then as the condition became worse and worse, you know, an interviewer could visibly see on his face the struggle he was having with losing the relationship in one sense and having the new normal be, well, she needs a little more help today, a little gradual loss of function, and I just help a little more today, a little more tomorrow. And eventually, you know, that condition just erodes to the point where he's overwhelmed by having to care for her, and was in a position where he had to make some tough decisions.
What's your relationship with Brian like today?
He's a good guy. He's a good person.
Eventually, you did move to a nursing home, though. Tell us about that transition.
I was not happy. I lost my family and my dog.
What was this transition like from your perspective, Doreen?
It was painful to watch, terribly. Kelly and I had already agreed we would embark on the storytelling because she has so much to share, and she's just done so much despite her obstacles that by the time we tried to get our first interview done, this whole transition had happened. So one morning, you wake up in your bed, and your husband comes in and says, I just can't do this anymore. It's time. I need to take you to a nursing home, and we're going today. You don't have a choice. You don't get to pick the place. You know, here you are in a house that was built specifically to address your needs. It was zero clearance entry, no stairs. There's an elevator built in the house. All the lift equipment you might need to help with her condition, all that was in place, but it was just too much for him, and he came to a crossroads and made that decision. Impacting her, you can imagine the shock of that, the trauma of that, and to wake up in your own bed one morning and to go to bed that night in a true nursing home where you share a room with someone else, and it was a Medicaid-funded facility. So there weren't a lot of amenities. There wasn't a whole lot of help or comfort, and visiting Kelly there every week because we kept the dialogue running through this whole traumatic experience for her. It was painful to watch a friend go through that trauma, in that grief, in that depression.
Brian was unable to bring this idea or put this out on the table before the day it happened. There was no discussion of this then leading up to this.
No. I look back at it, and I should have known that it was a nappy, but I didn't.
You're in a better facility now, though, correct?
Yes, I moved.
And you have a daughter. How often do you see your daughter, Riley?
At least once a week.
What led to Kelly and Brian's decision to adopt a daughter?
Well, they wanted to have a family together, but doctor's advice was with her condition, it wouldn't have been safe for Kelly to carry a child. So they decided that they would pursue adoption. And they knew some other people who had gone through a similar experience and borrowed from that knowledge. So they did adopt a daughter, Riley is her name, from Guatemala. So again, traveling at that time in a wheelchair, pretty daunting to get around, but they did it, and she was determined that she was going to be a mom, and in July of 2000, they brought that baby home.
Kelly, give us your thoughts on adopting Riley and what you remember from that period.
It was one of the best decisions of my life.
I'm speaking with Kelly Finger McNeela, who's an MSU grad, about her lifelong struggle with MS. She's joined by her friend, Doreen Rickert-Rademacher, who's written a book about Kelly's life called I Can and I Did. How has your condition worsened over the years? Has it been gradual? Were you in the condition you're in now many years ago? Or?
No. It's been gradual.
To what extent have you acclimated to your condition? And in what ways is it still most challenging?
It's most challenging when I have to watch life going on around me.
You feel you're more of a spectator of life. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
What keeps Kelly going from your view,
I'll
Doreen?
Tell you, she is creative. She may think she's watching, but as a good close friend, she's very active and involved. Good example, we're in various stages of planning different events, and she's very thoughtful and particular about what's to be served and how it's to look. And so she has every capacity creatively to plan everything. And then she just has a lot of us out there as her legs to make it happen in some ways. And helping other people, even though she can't physically open the door for someone, she'll be the first one to notice, hey, that person over there needs a hand. Can you run and do that? Just pointing out some things that we might overlook in our busyness, she always spots it because she's observing. So while it may be a drawback, I think it's also a blessing. And that's a big thing I've learned from her, is to pay more attention to what's going on around you, because that's what she does.
When it comes to dealing with people, what is the biggest challenge?
My voice. And getting my point across. Sometimes what I want to say doesn't come out right.
What do you hope other people will learn from your story, Kelly?
I hope that people learn to slow down and think about the other person and what they're going through.
Doreen, what about you? What would you like the book to accomplish?
I want people to understand that there's more to Kelly and others in similar circumstances than you see when you look at her. There's a whole backstory here. There's a whole list of achievements, and that she can accomplish a lot with a lot of obstacles, and maybe the rest of us could step up a little bit and help out too. And her giving spirit has been amazing to me, even as we were completing the book and trying to think of a title. And I said to her, what's your main message here? And she said, well, I'd like to encourage people to stop focusing on what they can't do and get thinking about what they can do, because there's always someone out there who has things worse. And that was so well said that we turned that into the title of the book. And I think it's motivational in that regard, that everybody can help somehow. And while she was going through her transition from the nursing home to a better assisted living facility, she encountered difficulty. And we wanted to use the story to shine a light on that so others might not have that same difficulty. Because Kelly at the time was 40 years old and trying to find another place to live. And you need independence, you need assistance, you'd like to be in a community of people close to your own age. So socially and emotionally you have camaraderie. But the only facilities that were really available for her are geared towards senior citizens and retirement living. So even the place where she's living now, which is terrific, but she is 4 decades younger than the next resident.
Mm.
So she said, maybe if we could use this book to raise awareness and money, we could actually build a place where people with physical disabilities could live among peers, and we could have it be for younger disabled adults. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we got started, and I think that's what we're trying to accomplish here.
Kelly Finger McNeela, Doreen Rickert-Rademacher, thanks to both of you for sharing your story with us here on Current State.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.